years. So she decided to get cochlear implants to help her hear. She says the decision cost her a job at the New York School for the Deaf in Greenberg. And finally, it was the warmest ever in November and December on Long Island. Weather records kept at the Brookhaven National Laboratory on Long Island show that November was the warmest ever, with an average high temperature of 59.3 degrees that broke the record set in November 1994 of 58 degrees. And December's record high temperature of 50 degrees was 0.4 of a degree warmer than the previous high set in 1984. Right now, it's about 41 degrees, going up to 47 degrees in New York. One of a warm day for late December, for early January, I would say.
Summertime.
I'm Paul DiRienzo for the WBAI News Department. Stay tuned for more of the morning show.
Paul, before you get out, a couple of things. You know, I mentioned earlier two things in the national news today. We should say this is WBAI 99.5 FM, Pacifica Radio, New York City. This business with the Marines in Pakistan. Now, one newspaper this morning reported seven Marines feared dead, as if there was no finality in the story. One of the other papers said seven Marines killed in tanker accident in Pakistan. What is the hardcore of this story? I think
since all the information comes from one place. The military, mm-hmm. You'd think that it was one point. It must have been a press conference with
right.
information. So how it got translated in two different ways,
right.
I don't know. I would assume if a plane full of fuel were to crash into a mountain,
mm-hmm.
that's usually you know, the end of it for everybody. I mean, unless it was like a situation where it skidded on the snow or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people have survived these kind of crashes, depending on how skillful the pilots were and everything. And maybe it wasn't full of fuel.
Also, what is your sense of the story, the lead piece in the Times today about what appears, from our military standpoint, an incursion now by Iran into the Afghan war?
Well, that's not surprising. I mean, Iran has always had a very close connection with Western Afghanistan. I've told this before to listeners, and I urge people to pick up all the various excellent books on the subject. But, you know, Afghanistan is very much a multicultural, multinational country. 160 different different languages, different mutually unintelligible languages. 160 among people the size and same population of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if Texas had 100. Maybe I've heard that Texas does have 160 different languages that nobody can understand.
Very good.
But that's another story. Mostly in Houston, but that this is a country that has had many different cultural movements that have swept across it from different directions. You know, in recorded Western history from the days of Alexander the Great. I mean, it was Greek at one time. It was part of the Greek Empire at one time, Afghanistan. It was part of the British Empire. It was part of Tamerlane. It was part of the Mongol Empire. It was part of the Persian Empire. It was part of the Indus Valley civilization. There's so many different nationalities and civilizations that have swept through Afghanistan in thousands of years. In Herat, you have the oldest continuously inhabited city in the world, over 4,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
People have lived in this Herat Valley, beautiful, you know, in the middle of the desert, a large valley that is beautiful, full of fruit trees and crops and what have you. Horribly, I missed the Soviet Union, which horribly destroyed Herat and caused tremendous environmental and warlike damage to the area in the course of the war, which the U.S. financed the other side of for 10 years. But it
seems, though, that we're getting deeper and deeper into
you have to see the history here. Yeah.
This
is deep. I mean, you know, Herat is in the Persian area, Dari.
Mm-hmm.
One of the languages, one of those 160 languages, is a language called Dari. It's the Afghani version of Farsi, the language of the Persian people. Another part of Afghanistan, people speak Pashto, which is a language of the Pakistani people, the Pashtun people, Pashto. Then you have Tajikistan in the north, and the people speak Tajik and Uzbek. They speak Uzbek, another language, another nationality. And those are and then the Hawara people in the central Afghanistan are historically, by legend, said to be direct descendants of Genghis Khan, though that some people say that's not true, but it gives you some idea of the roots.
So we got a lot going on there.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. is getting, and well, every country like the U.S. and England and Russia before has tried to play off all these groups in order to control Afghanistan. But you notice nobody is attempting to take over the countryside.
Paul, I thank you. You'll be back, so folks know, at 9:55 for the next newscast.
Thank you.
Okay. Here to turn to page A19, the national report of the New York Times today. He is in a bit of a fix up at Harvard, criticized by the president of the university for some of his activities, which include recently cutting a rap record. He's also charged with not participating in his class responsibilities, his teaching responsibilities, during his effort on behalf of Bill Bradley's presidential campaign. But what is, I believe, more at stake here than anything else, and let us say it here, because I do believe Dr. West is not going to say that there is something involved here in a rising tide around this country of attacks on black public figures, that everyone seems to feel that the black public figure is fair game. The criticism never, never seems to end, doesn't subside in any way. These attacks on Cornel West for doing things that people in the scholarly pursuits, or people on campuses, or people in the staffs of colleges and universities, have been doing for years. You know, people miss classes so they can write books. There are, I taught at an Ivy League university where for the entire year, one professor didn't show up, had the teaching assistants handling his class loads while he finished a book, and traveled and lectured. So this is, there is nothing new about what is involved in the now, I think appropriately, designated attack on Dr. Cornel West. Now, he says, and, you know, we'll just give you a little bit of a heads up in this article. I always urge people to read articles in their entirety rather than have them read in their entirety here. He has every right, this is Dr. Westcott, he has every right to talk about what kind of work I'm doing. But when it comes to an assessment of my work, he hasn't read one word I've written, and he hasn't listened to a note of my CD. Recently, Dr. West cut a CD that involves a history of African-American music. Now, the university has said that the CD is not scholarly enough. Well, in fact, what would be scholarly enough today, if you're talking about what should be categorized as modern American black music? Now, I will say this flat out. I'm not the biggest enthusiast, and perhaps I may be the smallest enthusiast, for what is called rap and hip-hop. That doesn't mean, however, that I don't respect and would not protect the right of every rapper, of every hip-hopper, to express themselves in the way they choose to express themselves. Andrea, you got a word here.
I just wanted to briefly say, I have the CD at home. I should say,
yes.
It's more like a spoken word poetry CD.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to it and I didn't feel it was rap categorized.
Okay.
So, you know, I'll bring it in for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we should take an opportunity to play it. I'm also going to try and reach Dr. West and see if we can have him on the air to talk about this. But I do think we need to be alert to an atmosphere that I feel is developing across the country, which some maybe consider a tangent to the effort to place in a category of the continually suspect persons of color, i.e., Arabs who cannot get on airplanes without being assumed to be terrorists. The new category of terrorists is going to include a lot of people, and not all of them from Arab nations or from Palestine. We are retrenching, it seems to me, into that area where folks feel that if you are not in the, quote, general population, which soon will now no longer be that. You know, in California, a lot of people shaking in their boots over the notion that very soon California will have a population that is less than half, less than 50% Caucasian. And there's a great deal of consternation over that. The real question, though, is what difference does that make? What is it you're assuming about the people who may be in that majority that causes you such concern? So if 51% of the population of California is, let us say, black, Mexican American, Asian American, so what? I mean, what does that mean? That people are going to be running into your house in the middle of the night, steal all your goods, murder your children? Same thing in the matter, and I think this is what one has to look at in the business about Dr. West. There is, and incidentally, he was attacked without any foundation at all in the pages of the Daily News earlier this week. And I'm reminded of that. The missive I received in my mailbox the other day describing me as a, I'm assuming, if we're not, somebody will say so, describing me as a pseudo-intellectual prick. Well, the fact is that who among black people in this country, male or female, is described as anything but pseudo-intellectual? Because the fact is that in my judgment, in so much of the white community, there is no respect for black scholarship. There is a respect for black prowess in basketball. There is a respect for the dominance of blacks in prize fighting. But who among the scholars of our nation, including Skip Gates, that is to say, Dr. Gates, who comes out and says, well, unequivocally, he is something other than pseudo? You see, when you get into the intellectual areas, there is a widespread assumption among so many folks that, one, black people are incapable of thinking at the higher levels, and should not be assumed capable of doing so. So I urge you to read this piece, Black Scholar Looks Past Mended Fence and Harvard. Now, Dr. West has said that he may return to Princeton University, from whence he came in going up to Harvard. And he is quoted in this piece as saying, as much as I forgive, I will not forget. And this is over what he regards as a full-out assault on his integrity as a scholar. And in this instance, as someone who is exploring, as Andrea pointed out, exploring areas of poetry, is that a non-scholarly pursuit, presumably? That he is pursuing the history of a certain kind of African-American expression? There's no scholarly imprimatur to be placed on that. One other piece I want to point out to you in today's... Incidentally, this is by way of urging. Read everything. And I would remind you again that your public library in your neighborhood has all of these publications. Don't spend money for them. Don't go to plunk down $3.50 for these weekly magazines. There's no reason to do that. The public library is your institution. Your tax money makes these institutions possible. Without your taxes, there would be no public libraries. That's why they're called public. So I urge you to go to your library today and say, I want to see a copy of today's Wall Street Journal. I'm sorry, yesterday's Wall Street Journal, January 9th. Life Insurance Company of Georgia tentatively has agreed to reimburse African-American customers more than $45 million to settle allegations that it routinely charged blacks higher rates than whites for identical policies. Where does this end? It's called redlining in New York. You know, black people go to get a mortgage, and they say, well, where are you looking for a piece of property? And then they find out, well after the fact, perhaps, that the banks are, in a sense, cheating them on the basis of the color of their skin, and for no other reason. How many times have we heard about a white couple being, a black couple being sent to look at an apartment? You know, you take a look at their work history, their income, their bank accounts, and they said, well, we'll let you know we're going to have other people looking at the apartment. White couple comes in right after them and is told, hey, the apartment's yours. Black couple goes in, looks at the apartment, says, the apartment is no longer available. We rented it already. White couple goes right after them and they say, sure, if you want the apartment, it's yours. Well, the real question here is, why is it that when these matters are brought up, nobody connects the dots? We say, look, this is widespread stuff. This goes on in any part of the United States. Go to California, go to Oregon, go to Missouri, go to Mississippi, go to Florida, go to Massachusetts. These stories are told over and over again. And when it reaches into what I described as the earlier assault, really, on Dr. Cornel West, in the pages of the New York Daily News, by a writer, incidentally, who, if memory serves me, has never had anything good to say about any black public official. Okay, now people will say, well, that doesn't mean that he's discriminating. Caller was on the air yesterday, urging us to believe that although racism may exist in a lot of places, doesn't exist here. Doesn't exist among the people who are surrounding the current brouhaha at Pacifica Radio. You know, no racism here. You know, no bigots here. No discriminatory statements here. Right. We are an island, presumably, unto ourselves. Unrelated to the emotions, to the mindsets that affect other people. And it is 9:18. I do want to particularly read this piece in the Wall Street Journal. That's yesterday. Some of you can pull it down off the web. Wednesday, page B1. The marketplace section. Oh, wait a minute. Have I got the right one? Oh, no. You do want to read that. There's a piece called Counties Struggle with High Cost of Prosecuting Death Penalty Cases, a piece by Russell Gold. Well worth reading. How really ugly the whole death penalty scene actually is when it bends over into the whole economy of some region of the country. The piece I mentioned to you, Life of Georgia's settlement, or tentative settlement, apparently, over a bias issue on which routinely, apparently, they have been charging black policyholders more for their policies than the identical policies made available to whites. Well, unfortunately, we can't say that is a story from the past. Somebody hearing this will say, oh, yeah, that must be from the Wall Street Journal 25, 30 years ago. No, it's yesterday. From now till we'll take some of your calls. Particularly, I want to talk about this issue for those of you all at all familiar with the situation up at Harvard, because this is a story that's been going on now for some time. It should be noted also that this comes at a time when Dr. West is dealing with a very serious illness, and in fact will face surgery in a short period of time. So he's got to deal with, does he stay at Harvard, does he leave and go to Princeton? His work, I think, extraordinarily valuable. I say that as someone, and certainly no hesitation saying it to him, did not agree with many of the positions he has recently taken in his works, and also very concerned am I about what I feel is a less focused and sharp effort in his literary works than was being made 10 years ago. 209-2900 is our number. Let's see what we can do until 9:30. We ask you to act like you got good sense and speak like an adult. If not, we will move on. WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm interested in learning more about the Pacifica mission, the original mission from the Quaker.
Very good question.
Lou Hill, and I think it's at WBAI.net. They have a lot of good information, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you've read it. Why don't you tell me about the mission?
No, I just think it'd be great to hear about it on the radio.
Okay, well, let's hear. You're on the radio right now. Let's hear about it.
I don't have it in front of me.
Well, did you look at it. You must remember some of the points.
No, I heard that it was on WBAI.net.
Can you access that?
Yes, I can, but not while I'm on the phone.
No. What I'm saying is that let's have this conversation with you perhaps at another point when you've had an opportunity to look at it. I'll tell you very honestly, I have looked at a number of documents purporting to detail the mission of the station. One thing I would say about that, remember the mission statement was written more than 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
At a time when Lou Hill, who was the founder of Pacifica, certainly did not envision a five-station network spread across the country, and also could not possibly have known that the WBAI mission and the Pacifica mission would have to include listeners all over the world. Because now with the Internet, you can pull down this program as it is being broadcast right now, as I recently learned, in London. You just go to the machine and hook up the numbers. And even as we are broadcasting, of course, it's the middle of the afternoon in London now, but you can hear this broadcast. So the whole idea of what the mission represented at that time may need to be expanded into this time. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the corporate problem and the problem of peace
what is
the
corporate,
same as in Lou Hill's time.
Well, what is the corporate problem? I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, for example, all the money that's been spent defending the people who changed the locks and took our station. The money's down 40% of the station. The listeners
could
are
I
down
inter-
40%.
Could I intervene? Could I intervene to ask you something? What do you mean by our station?
Well, the community station, WBAI.
Yeah, am I a part of that?
Yeah, you're one of the people who helped to remove the people who were there before.
Okay, so how did I do that?
30-something people, right?
How did I do that?
By remaining there and supporting the people who changed the locks.
Well, clearly you don't know what you're talking about.
Say goodbye, Clayton.
In point of fact, that always happens. I'm glad they have learned now to say goodbye instead of waiting for me to do so for them. Good morning. You're on the air. WBAI, you're on the radio.
Hello, Clayton.
Yes.
Hi, how are you? It's nice to speak with you.
Okay.
I've tried for a few times to get you. And listen, you know, you brought up a couple of important issues. The first one was a few days back when you talk about her rights, her constitutional rights being trampled upon. And I don't hear a lot of people talking about it, but that's something we should talk about every day.
Yes.
But another point that I want to talk about, because I'm rushed for time, is the attack on Professor West.
Yes.
Now, it's not only Professor West, but, you know, it's. I wish I could fax this to you. I pulled off the net maybe about a month ago an attack on Charles Ogletree, who's a law professor.
At Harvard.
At Harvard. And it all centered around his trying to schedule a meeting to bring Jesse Jackson to speak to the law school on September 24th, just after the bombing. And he was attacked severely by another professor by the name of Alvin Warren. I don't know if I should mention his name.
That's all right. Sure.
Over the law school. And, you know, I have the entire thing in front of me. It may be too long to read.
Well, take a portion of it, if you would.
Well, it starts out like this. This is the attack on Charles Ogletree. I said, and this was faxed to a number of other law professors. It says, I have just received law school mail indicating that Charles has scheduled a speech by Jesse Jackson at 8 a.m. on Monday, September 24th, precisely when my taxation class meets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then he went on to make a big fuss about it. And in any event, there's a number of emails that went back and forth. But in essence, what happened is that Charles Ogletree finally reached him. And he apologized for it. Just read a portion of it. He talked about it and he said, I completely agree with the spirit of your concerns. I share them, apologize for the unique inconvenience, and will not schedule any future sessions during the mornings or afternoon, et cetera, et cetera. And then this fellow wrote back to him, even after Charles apologized, say, thank you for your message apologizing for having scheduled a speech by a major public figure in law school, et cetera, et cetera, regular. Unfortunately, the apology does nothing to reduce the conflict you have created for about 10 courses, et cetera, and really blasted him. And then it went on. Charles Ogletree just became upset, and he said, he wrote back to him saying, I have been traveling today and just retrieved your last message. I have apologized for this unique set of circumstances, but I'm not prepared to kiss your ass, et cetera, et cetera. But this guy was just lambasted for us scheduling a simple meeting, mm-hmm. and this was sent to about maybe 10 other law professors. And in essence, he finished his email by saying, you know, that he was just fed up with the situation at Harvard. So this is indicative of what not only Professor West, but other professors at Harvard are experiencing.
Well,
and
I
would love to fax this to you because it's 10 pages, it's very detailed, it's very easy to follow.
Hold on just one second. Let's see if we, as I continue to speak with you, let's see if we can get the fax number. I would like to read this. But you see, what concerns me, and I have heard Charles Ogletree lecture. I know Dr. West. And indeed have both interviewed him and participated with him in events. These are men of integrity, in my judgment. And when this kind of thing happens, what deeply concerns me is that it goes beyond the issue it presumes to address.
Absolutely.
Into an atmosphere created to say that you do not belong here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was the tone of the emails that were going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Let me give you our email address here at the station. I'm sorry, fax number.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And, of course, it's area code 212-747.
747-1698. 1698.
I would very much like to receive that material. We're going to try and have, as soon as possible, Dr. West on the air. And I'm glad you brought up the issue with Charles Ogletree,
yeah,
because we will certainly make an effort to have him speak as well.
Okay, that's 212-747-1698.
You've got it.
Okay, listen, I'm going to fax this to you right now.
Good.
And I commend what you're doing. And I know it's a tough situation there, but I think you're a tough man, and you need to hang in there.
Well, I thank you very much for that. Very appreciative.
Brother.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
WBAI, and you're on the radio.
Good morning, Clayton.
Good morning.
I've been listening to your morning shows, and I definitely appreciate hearing Miles Davis' Porgy and Bess album.
Okay.
Always a classic.
Yeah. Well, we got that with us. Maybe we get a tune or two in before we get out of here today.
I'm very sorry to hear if there are people who are using any kind of racial epithets and taunting you or volunteers or anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of thing is unforgivable, and no one who loves WBAI should engage in any kind of racial epithets or racial bigotry or any kind of playing of race cards. I wanted to very quickly give two points of clarification.
Sure.
The first is, my understanding is that Leslie Kagan has not called for anyone to be fired or banned at WBAI. That's my understanding.
Okay, let me address that if I may. If in fact you are calling for the return of the, again, banned and the fired, to what or where do they return?
I think that what a lot of people feel is that once they are inside the station in some form, then gradually you work out the issues of who is programmed into what slots.
Well, and that means ultimately that some people will be banned and fired. So you exchange one group of banned and fired for another.
I don't accept your logic on that.
Well, where is the room for all of the... If you have 30 banned and fired, and you bring them back into the station, who leaves? And under what circumstances?
I think clearly that's something that would be need to be worked out, but the point I'm making is that Mr. Daughtry may have accidentally left the impression that Leslie Kagan had called for people to be fired.
Well, he had a conversation with her, and I think he was very clear on what the terms of that conversation had been.
Well, the reason I was calling is because I felt that maybe it wasn't clear that she did not call for anyone to be...
Have you spoken to her about this?
I have not spoken to her personally. I've been following the debate on both sides.
Well, my point here is he has spoken to her personally, and his note on our air this morning is that when he asked her very specifically whether the return of the banned and the fired would result in the removal of people who are now employed here, her answer was yes.
With all respect, Clayton, I listened to Mr. Doty very carefully.
Yes.
And I didn't hear him saying that.
Well, what did you hear him say?
I heard him saying that Leslie Kagan said that the banned and fired people should be returned. I didn't hear him say that she said that someone should be fired or anyone should be fired.
I think you're really begging the question here. The fact is, you understand as well as I do, if you have an hour of airtime currently being occupied by an individual for that hour, and someone is forcibly returned to the station, someone has to give up space.
Well, hypothetically speaking...
That's not hypothetical.
No, I'm offering you a hypothetical. I'm not referring to what you said as a hypothetical. As the term interim is used quite a bit these days, here's an interim thought that perhaps is a counter-argument to what you just said.
Okay.
6 a.m. to 7 a.m., Marjorie Moore.
Yes.
7 a.m. to 8 a.m., Paul DiRienzo and Santiago Nieves.
Mm-hmm.
8 a.m. to 9 a.m., Bernard White, Amy Goodman, and Robert Knight.
Mm-hmm.
9 a.m. to 10 a.m., Democracy Now.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday
That's
morning...
Again, that would again be Amy Goodman. So Amy Goodman would be from 8 to what?
Well, Amy Goodman, again, I don't want to micromanage it. It's
It's certainly possible, at least on a short-term basis, to bring
people in without firing anyone.
Caller, you did micromanage when you said that she would be on two separate programs. Did you not just say that?
I am not fighting for that.
But you just stated it.
I stated it as a trial balloon and as an example of how you can bring people back without firing people.
Okay, well, in your scenario, I would be fired because I work as a volunteer on Saturday.
I apologize. I'm sure there's a way around that.
Okay.
I'm sure we can keep your contribution without banning and firing the people who were banned and fired last year. And that's my point.
Don't bet the farm on that. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
WBAI, you're on the air. This is, in fact, did I say this was Pacifica Radio New York City for 9:30? Okay.
I'm not sure. Well, hi.
How you doing?
Yeah, I heard earlier when you were speaking to the general manager, Mr. Daughtry.
Yes.
You made an analogy.
Yes.
Comparing those who, the management that is now in place, comparing them with the union and the dissidents with the Confederacy.
Right.
And I would say this, you know, there's really no need to use an analogy. It's just a clear-cut situation. You have a nonprofit organization that is locked out and fired some of its members or workers. And they went to court, okay, and won a settlement. Now, those people who had replaced those workers, I've always known, are called scabs.
I'm going to end our conversation for the use of that term. Say goodbye to me. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello? Hello?
Clayton?
Yes, yes.
How you doing? This is Adam. How are you?
Hi, Adam.
You know, I'm tired of everyone calling up about the internal business of the state.
Right.
And
well,
you know
we gave, Adam, if I may, we gave people an opportunity to talk about what I think are two very important stories. The caller before the last caller did that in mentioning what the implications of the conflict going on between an eminent black scholar and his university. No one has yet addressed the issue of what the Life of Georgia tentative settlement is about, in which black policyholders have been discriminated against for a number of years over the issue of whether their color should subject them to higher policy payments than other people. I say that because, Adam, you're exactly right, and you're putting your finger on precisely the right button. People do not want to deal with the issues. It's as though there isn't a war in Afghanistan. It's as though there isn't this question of, for example, the retrial, the possible retrial of Lemrick Nelson and Charles Price. Those things don't matter. All that seems to matter to our callers is to go around calling people scabs, and this has nothing to do, it seems to me, with what this radio station should be about at this time.
Exactly. You know, you have your views and they have their views, but the issues are important. It's like when Khalid Muhammad gave his Million Youth March and Giuliani made a big stink about it, and that was diverting from the true issues at hand, such as the lack of proper education in the ghetto or for minority groups in general in New York City, or police brutality, and so on and so forth. You know, and people are calling up for their own, you know, and look, I might not agree with you. Someone might agree with you. I agree with you on 99% of what you say. I think that if the trial was tainted for Lemrick Nelson and Charles Price, I think, yes, they will go to jail on the next trial because the evidence is pointing against them, but let's have a fair and legitimate trial.
Indeed.
And, you know, and yes, I'm sure you'll agree with me. You know, the evidence is clear. Lemrick Nelson was witnessed by at least 10 people stabbing him, and the police caught him with the knife.
Okay, Adam, let me say this is maybe where 1% of our disagreement. I believe Lemrick Nelson was part of a group of people who were attacked. Yankel Rosenbaum, I have never been convinced that in that crowd of people it was definitively proven that he was the stabber. And let me say this. One of the first reports was that the knife was found at the scene. Follow me?
Yeah.
Another subsequent report said the knife was found on him when he was captured some distance away.
By a transit cop.
Okay. Now, all I'm saying there is that we understand, Adam, certainly you do, and I've heard you speak here many times, we understand what the question of reasonable doubt means within the framework of our judicial system. I would have very serious doubts if that evidence had been presented to me. You're saying, wait a minute, you found a knife at the scene. This is the knife that killed the person. Later on, I hear, well, no, we found the knife in his pocket a mile or so away later on. Well, I would have some serious doubts about the reporting in that regard.
So they did find the knife at the scene, you're saying?
Well, the first report was that they found it at the scene. Second report was that they found it on his person some distance away later on. The knife presumably was first found on the ground. The other thing is that Yankel Rosenbaum's identification of Lemrick Nelson occurred in circumstances that I think many of us would question. It was late at night. It was dark. There were any number of people who apparently had surrounded him during this attack. I would question how specific that identification could in fact have been. But let's go back to your original point. All that has been called for by this three-judge panel is for a retrial. It doesn't say that they are set free. It doesn't say that they're exonerated. And you made that point very well. If there is some question about the way the trial proceeded at that time, try them again. And let's see what happens.
Can I talk about something else real quick?
Go ahead, very quickly, Adam.
I just wanted to mention that, you know, you're a well-seasoned voice to the communities, and so is Earl Caldwell, another great journalist. And you know Cornel West. I know, because I've heard him on BAI, and
right.
He's a great scholarly human being, obviously. And I think everyone should get together, get some money, okay? We can't, because, you know, it's like preaching to the converted. Like, everyone that listens to you, Earl, we all know everything you're saying is true, but we have to get it accomplished. And, like, you'd have to go on Fox News with Hannity and Combs and put them in their place. Put Sean Hannity, the Ku Klux Hannity, in his place. And then we have to get a full page in every newspaper on one day or 2 days on a weekday morning. So when they're on their number 6 train or number 5 train or whatever, they're reading the New York Post, and I hope every black man and woman in this city has never read that Ku Klux rag. And, you know, the thing is, we have to get a full page, like when the PBA is trying to PR,
mm-hmm.
put a whole page in a regular news page of the litany, the list of Giuliani's abuses, the facts of how he violated civil rights, the fact how he acted like a cracker mayor, you know, and didn't do anything for this city, except after September 11th, he did his job, and that's all he did. This, if you were mayor, you would have done the same thing. I would have done the same thing. We need to get a rich person with our frame of mind to take an ad in every periodical in this city. And, you know, lip service is great. We could all be on the radio talking issues, and you know, but it's not getting anything accomplished. We're still sitting here in the same pile of crap. You know,
Adam,
what I mean?
Your point's well taken, and it is certainly something to be pursued. I feel very strongly about what you said.
You have the connection.
Because in a program we did about a year ago, I guess it was, we said, look, the next person to assume leadership should be a person with the wealth to fend off enemies, and you know what that means, but who has, as you just stated, an alternative point of view. There's such a person out there somewhere. We're going to try and find him. Adam, I want to thank you for calling.
Have a good one. Happy
or
New
find
Year.
Her, I should say.
Happy New Year.
You as well.
Oh, bye.
WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Clayton.
Yes.
You had said it's Pacifica Radio.
Yes.
I'm a little confused because Pacifica Radio is broadcasting Democracy Now! Right now.
Really?
Nine and.
Are you listening?
That's my understanding.
But wait a minute, are you listening?
Am I listening to
what? To Pacifica, to Democracy Now.
No, I'm not. And that's
how do you know they're broadcasting?
Because, Clayton, don't play the games.
I'm not playing games. I'm asking you a question. How do you know they're broadcasting? We have been informed that not all the stations are carrying the feed.
Well, it was my understanding that they are, that they've been...
Well, where did you get that information?
I got it on WBAI.
Who said so?
Let's see.
Okay, I think we'll move on. Thank you a lot for calling. WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you are... Is somebody on the air? Is there somebody out there? WBAI, you're on the radio. We're joined in studio by Paul Williams.
And good morning.
Now on the board. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is John.
John.
I'm in Manhattan. I wanted to add one additional dimension to the story of Cornel West at Harvard.
Yes, okay.
I think is crucial. He campaigned, as I think you mentioned, for Bill Bradley.
Yes, he did.
And when Bradley was eliminated from the race, he then went and campaigned for Ralph Nader.
Okay.
Quite vigorously.
Mm-hmm.
As I did.
Yes.
And that was on the Green Party line. And that was, of course, against Bush and Gore. Now, the current president of Harvard, you know, was the Secretary of Treasury in the Clinton administration.
Yes, he was.
So I think there's a connection there also. This is not to deny the racism.
Okay, let's explore the connection as you see it.
Well, I know, having been active in the Ralph Nader campaign, I know that there was a lot of Democratic Party dirty tricks from the national level against the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I subscribed to a number of Green Party listservs, and the Democrats set up several listservs purporting to be Green Party listservs, and they used those for dirty tricks. For example, trying to persuade Green Party members that Ralph Nader was a spoiler and get them to urge him to pull out of the race.
Okay.
And it was somewhat effective, as a matter of fact.
Okay, now let's see if we can connect the dots here. Lawrence Summers, who is currently the president of Harvard,
right.
Was, as you stated, part of the Clinton administration. And so is it your feeling that because of that connection, he feels some animosity toward Dr. West's participation in the Green Party and Ralph Nader campaign?
I believe that's, yes, most likely.
Okay. Point well made. Thank you for calling.
I think it's something to pursue, you know, keep
an eye. All right. We'll certainly keep an eye on it. Certainly we're going to have, I'm sure very soon we're going to have, well, I'm not so sure how soon, you know, Dr. West is... he's not well. He's going to have surgery very soon. When we can speak to him, we will. We make an effort also to have Lawrence Summers come on.
Yes, I think that would be very interesting.
Well, we'll make that move. Thank you very much for calling.
Okay. Bye.
All right. It is 9:45 in about 10 minutes. Man, I can't even do math anymore. Paul, what is it? Is that a cruller you have, man, or what? It's a what? Oh, okay. Just checking. I know. I thought it would help my mathematics because I couldn't figure out from now until 55 was 10 minutes. Okay, WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning. WBAI, good morning. You are on the radio.
Good morning, Mr. Clayton Riley.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just turning my radio down. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. This is Howard Gordon from Brooklyn again.
Okay, Howard.
Calling to tell you that I like your show, and I'd like to respond to the issue of Dr. Cornel West.
Yes.
I'm really fond of Dr. West, and I think he's a brilliant man. And I hadn't had the opportunity to read your article in the Daily News,
mm-hmm.
and I would like to read that.
I believe the man's name is Chavetz, C-H-A-V-E-T-S. Zev, I think it's EV.
Okay.
First name.
Do you know what day it would be in?
It was earlier this week.
Okay.
I believe Monday. Don't pin me down on it. But, you know, you'll be able to find it.
Yeah, sure. That thanks a lot. And the other thing is that, you know what, I'm sure we all have read articles like that. And ignorance is, sometimes it makes really interesting reading for many people. And when I didn't read the article, but when I read stuff like that, I think that we have to consider the source that it's ignorance.
Mm.
And it is also, you know, discriminatory. You could make that argument as well.
Howard, I'm going to disagree with you slightly here.
Okay.
I don't think ignorance is the term we need to use.
Uh-huh.
Because there is a deliberate effort being made on the part of many people who are not, in my judgment, categorized as ignorant. There is a growing assault on the black presence in this nation. There are people, and I say that it bends its way into this enterprise, the enterprise of Pacifica. And this is why, incidentally, we encourage people starting tomorrow, you know, the Pacifica board meeting begins here in New York City. We urge people to come. And if necessary, deputize yourself as freelance journalists, interview people, bring your cameras and take photographs, but see that people understand that you, as a listener, you know, a lot of people call up here, and, as this woman called earlier, and referred to our radio station. You see, that's a very narrow concept that I believe she was using. We need, Howard, to say that when we talk about this radio station, there is a broad-based listenership, and
right.
Not all people agree with the dissident point of view. And in that disagreement, people should use certainly their discretion and how they approach protest or how they approach the simple matter of asking questions. But we do know that many questions should be answered this weekend. Many questions should be asked this weekend as the Pacifica Board meets here in New York City. We are we understand now that the meeting will take place at the will not take place, I am told, at the DoubleTree Hotel, 47th and Broadway. But you should simply keep an eye on that location to see if, in fact, this is misinformation or disinformation intended
okay.
to confuse you. The other site is the Union Hall, located in Lower Manhattan on the lower end of 6th Avenue, which is headed by Ray LaForest. I'm not completely, we'll get the address. I'm sure it'll be stated to you today. But make your presence known.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
But, you know, I want to also respond to you that, yeah, it is more than ignorance. And I can tell you what I was talking about when I said ignorant, but there is a pervasive aspect to debasing many prominent black leaders and to make a slant on what's really going on for the individual and to put them down. If you look on the cover of the Daily News, you can see so many negative articles, and unfortunately, you know, they have the photographs of black men. Michael Jordan's wife wants a divorce, and you know, and that's a negative thing. It's a fact of life that people have divorces, and also the black men, they have Crown Heights Shaka, you know, Lemerick Nelson. So when it's a negative thing in response to black people, that tend to make interesting reading for many of those readers, but I'm not saying it's right.
Howard, we're going to have to move on, but I do want to make a note of what you just said.
Let me just finish
let me say something, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I'm saying to you that the note you make about that headline, anybody in journalism know that when you say a Crown Heights shocker, you better have a story that shows the reader what's so shocking about a three-court federal panel calling for the retrial of somebody.
Yeah.
There's nothing shocking about that.
Yeah, but a person who's ignorant reads that will just suck it up and soak it up. But in response to Dr. West, I didn't read the article, but it'd be nice if he can speak perhaps to Mr. Marsalis, the music family. When they make connections to music, they talk about music from a historical perspective, and they use it in a quite scholarly way. And I'm not suggesting that Cornel West does that, but historically, music plays a major role in the African American community because it was an opportunity to exercise freedom of speech, to an artistic expression, and that was an area that the community was allowed to really talk about and communicate what was going on for them and for
Howard. Us. Howard, we really got to close it up, my friend.
Okay.
We want to just get another call in if
All right,
we
Mr.
may.
Riley.
We will certainly talk to you again, as you well know.
Okay, Mr. Riley.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Peace and Islam. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I actually called yesterday, but I just wanted to finish my point.
Go right ahead.
I was thrown off by so much this morning. Because I just had a thought, and I was thinking about this because I wanted to look at perception for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Not just with the situation at WBAI, but basically most things that go on in the world. I honestly feel, my own personal feeling, is that blacks and whites view things differently. And I say that an example is, I remember Mike Wallace having a story on 60 Minutes. I mean, it was like a headline that he had news about. He had Minister Farrakhan admitting to having something to do with the murder of Malcolm X, and I mean, I was riveted and I was glued to that television Sunday night. I waited and I watched this story and I perceived that totally different than the way he had explained that.
I remember that broadcast.
Yeah,
and there was well, again, let us not shy away from the reality that, and let's be clear, when we talk about what can be characterized in our nation as a culture of whiteness, a culture of blackness, we're not necessarily talking about all black folks and all white folks.
Can I cut you?
But there are cultures. Yeah, go ahead. Do very quickly. You got about 35 seconds.
Okay, I totally agree with you, and I'm not saying that all white folks are a certain way.
Good.
Because there's
Good.
Many beautiful white
Good.
People who I deal with. But what I am saying is that there is a very reprobate attitude towards blacks with a lot of the things that come into play with how we deal with them. And if you even, I just got into history very deep, and I'm finding that everywhere where the dynamics of the countries or regions turn, it turned from black to brown to white. And then those problems arose.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that. Oh, a good book to read is They Came Before Columbus, Ivan Van Sertima.
I've got
Excellent.
It.
Excellent.
Thank
good
you
book.
Very much. Take
you.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to roll on out of here. We'll be back tomorrow. Robert Daughtry will return, our general manager. We'll have some words for you tomorrow. Woo! My goodness. You know that's Aaron Neville, right? If you don't know, you should. Anyhow, the next voice you will hear, perhaps equally as melodic, is that of Paul DiRienzo, our news guy. Paul, you got it.
Let me sing for my supper. Steve, Rocky Terrain is making it impossible for Marines to drive vehicles to the mountain crash site at a United States military tanker plane in Pakistan. Searchers are getting there on foot. A Marine spokesman says they're trying to recover the bodies of seven Marines killed in the crash. Tom Ridge says the 2002 Winter Olympics will be one of the most secure sporting events in history. Speaking on NBC, the director of Homeland Security said every conceivable possible attack scenario has been taken into consideration. And Morgan K. Beamer carries her father's middle name. The healthy baby girl was born to Lisa Beamer yesterday. She's the widow of Todd Beamer, one of the passengers whose hijacked plane crashed in a Pennsylvania field on September 11th. President Bush today directed the Treasury Department to review overall United States pension regulations in the wake of the collapse of Enron. Bush was to announce the move after meeting his economic advisors at the White House today. Officials, speaking on condition of anonymity, said Bush ordered Treasury to review regulations covering company pensions and 401k pension plans, and that Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill will head the review. The U.S. Justice Department Wednesday said it had opened a criminal probe into Enron Corporation after the failed energy trading giant collapsed late last year, throwing thousands of workers out of work and wiping out investors. A task force at the department was being established to handle the case now that the decision had been made to make its probe a full-fledged criminal investigation. And here in the city, police do not believe that bigotry was behind the vandalism at a pizzeria in Concord, the neighborhood of Concord in Staten Island yesterday, or on, this was a couple of days ago, and a December fire at a nearby deli owned by the same man. Hameen Shah Syed met with borough police officials hours after bricks were thrown through the windows of My Pizza restaurant on Targhee Street, which he owns. Syed also owns My Deli, a 24-hour store located a block away from the pizzeria on Ryan Avenue and Narrows Road North that was nearly destroyed by a fire on December 22nd. Assistant Chief Anthony J. Mara, the borough police commander, said there are several leads that are being investigated right now and the incidents do not seem to be bias-related. Investigators are checking several business angles as they beef up surveillance of the area. Leads being explored include rival business owners or others who, quote, may be annoyed at the success of Mr. Syed's business. And there is a demonstration, by the way, planned, and we'll give you some information on that in Staten Island to protest these attacks. Former Long Island Congressman Rick Lazio is said to be laying the groundwork so he can run for his old seat in the House of Representatives. Lazio gave up his seat to run for the U.S. Senate against Hillary Rodham Clinton after Rudolph Giuliani dropped out of the race. People close to Lazio told Newsday that Lazio has talked with GOP leadership about retaining his seniority and possibly getting a chairmanship to a subcommittee if he should run and win in November. And recovery workers at Ground Zero have uncovered a commuter train lying underneath the rubble of the World Trade Center, but no bodies were found inside the train. The train had been out of service when the buildings collapsed. It was run by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. New York City has reached a $400,000 settlement with the family of 7-year-old Gavin Cato in connection with his 1991 death. That comes just several days after a federal appeals panel reversed or ordered a new trial in the convictions of two black men in the killing of a rabbinical student in the rebellions following Cato's death in Crown Heights. And it's the warmest ever November and December on Long Island. That's according to the Brookhaven National Laboratory. November was 59.3 degrees. That broke the record set in November 1994 of 58 degrees. It is currently 41 going up to 47 degrees in New York. My name is Paul DiRienzo. Now to the Pacifica Report.
WBAI needs your support. If you appreciate this radio station, please help keep it thriving. If you have access to the Internet, you can show your support online 24 hours a day at www.wbai.org. If you listen, then please do your part to keep WBAI strong. WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Radio for a changing world.
It's 10 a.m. straight up. This is indeed listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI.